In taping these lectures
by Father John Hardin, S.J.,
on the principles and practice of formation in the religious life, it has been necessary from time to time to retape or re-record because of excessive tape or surface noise. The substitute voice is Robert Warnock. But the ideas, the words, the conclusions are all Father John Hardin, S.J. We now move on to number 17 in the list of principle and practice of formation in the religious life. The subject: can we recognize growth in holiness? Can we recognize growth in holiness? Before we go on to expand on the answer, let me say briefly, the answer, if it was in a catechism, would be yes, comma, within limits, period. Before we go further, I might ask a further question, namely, why this question? Well, the question needs to be raised. In order to encourage ourselves that we are, as the expression goes, making spiritual progress, all I know is that there is nothing more encouraging than a certain success. God wants us to recognize that we're making some progress for our encouragement. Why the question? In order to encourage others. And this is of great value for those who are in charge of formation, whether as superiors or directresses or whatever, and not just for the youngsters in the religious life, but for all of us. We need encouragement, and there is no encouragement more important, I think, for a sincere religious than to be told you're doing well. Now, it may be that you will have to look very deep to search and scrounge to make an honest statement. You're making progress. Be always prepared to make an honest statement. You're making progress. Be always prepared to make that statement, to answer the question, I am. How can you tell? You better be able to tell. And say something intelligent. In this matter, people don't need a long demonstration. Most people are just satisfied that you're telling the truth when you tell them that they are growing in the spiritual life. Again, it is necessary for those in authority, in communities, because if individuals are not making progress, they should be, for example, given certain responsibilities which may require a more mature person. Well, how can you tell the person has matured unless there is some index of growth? Again, it is important for other members in the community. There is nothing more discouraging for any one religious than to see others in his or her community, at least ostensibly or apparently, not growing in the spiritual life. The hardest thing for anyone to do is to grow, say, herself, if no one else seems to bother. And finally, in the apostolate, sometimes young religious, or say, a young priest, may have positions of responsibility with people who are themselves quite mature spiritually, lay people. The hardest thing, some lay people tell me, is to go to confession to some immature, childish priest. What a test of faith. Is it important to be able to recognize growth in holiness? Yes, so as not to turn off or turn away, or at least be less effective in working with sometimes very mature, spiritually speaking, people. And we may have authority over them. If they're going to respect us, they'd better see us grown up. So much for the why of the question. I'm still not getting into the practical recommendations, and I have 22 ways of recognizing growth in the spiritual life. But I want to prepare myself. I suggest living a planned life. I try to live one myself. What are the problems underlying this question? And there are problems. Perhaps they're not so much problems as statements of faith. Things we should know about holiness before we talk intelligently about how do you recognize growth in holiness. First, fact of faith, there are two kinds of holiness. There is what is called substantial or essential holiness, and there is what we call moral or practical holiness. The two are not the same. And in dealing with others, be sure never to mistake the one for the other. What is substantial or essential holiness? Substantial or essential holiness is the possession of God's grace in the soul. Faith tells us that's the essence. A baby, 2 weeks old, just baptized, may scream or cry or do all kinds of, inconvenient things while being baptized. Yet, the moment the words of baptism are pronounced and the water is poured, that child possesses essential holiness. So deep that we believe that should it die at that moment, it would immediately behold the face of God. That is holiness in reality. And this holiness no eye can see except the eye of God. On this level, we cannot pass judgment on anyone else, in fact, not even on ourselves. We hope, we trust, that we are in God's friendship. Now that essentially substantial holiness is also to grow. The point is, you better distinguish between growing in that and growing in the second, or moral, practical holiness. What is moral or practical holiness? It is the holiness that is shown in the practice of virtue. My patience, my kindness, my forbearance, my obedience, my humility, and on through the litany of the Christian virtues. This kind of holiness can be recognized. Recognized by others, recognized by myself. By myself in myself, by me in others. Most people, when they talk about growth in holiness, mean, whether they realize it or not, moral or practical holiness. Isn't it important to make the distinction? And this is something we have to learn from even the lives of the saints. God allowed some things. Well, the best example that comes to mind is Jerome, the great scriptural scholar, Irascible Jerome. The names he called some people in writing, well, they were bitter words. I had a spiritual father who taught me canon law, who had a violent temper. You never knew, if you were in class, if an eraser or sometimes a book would come flying in your direction. After class, he was all apologies. Only a few scholastics volunteered to serve his mass. You never knew how he would react to some mistake you made. I didn't happen to serve him on this occasion. One day he was putting on his amice. You know the strands from the amice were, well, they were tangled. And the only one thing he figured should be done, he tore them off and picked up another amice. I can tell you, he was a very holy man. I believe the last letter he wrote before he died, he wrote to me. One reason I am here is because of him. It was a short letter, written with a shaky, dying hand. John, teach the faith. Spend yourself in teaching the truth, because the church has entered on a way of the cross when millions will lose their faith. Well, a word about books, articles, conferences, and homilies on growth in holiness. This is all before I get into my 22 norms. Let me just tell you that four words are regularly used in speech and writing on the subject. They are growth, say in holiness, progress in the spiritual life, stages of perfection, and spiritual maturity. These terms and others like them assume we are to grow in sanctity. But before we go on to examine the norms for judging ourselves and judging others, or helping others judge themselves, let's make sure that we carefully distinguish in our own minds between growth or progress or stages that only God can recognize and the progress that we can recognize. Otherwise, as I know, some people can become so preoccupied with progress, their own growth and holiness, that it becomes literally an obstacle. Preoccupation with growth in holiness can become an obstacle to progress in the spiritual life. And I say this not only for the young, but for what I might call the veterans in religious life. Because the older we are, the more years we have to look back at and say honestly to the Lord, Lord, all these years, where have they gone? Here I am, 20 or 30 or more years in the religious life, and what progress have I made? I know that as I speak, having dealt with so many souls, preoccupation note the word, preoccupation with growth or progress in the spiritual life, I consider one of the principal sources of discouragement. Attention to progress, yes. Concern to grow, yes. Preoccupation, emphatically no. Now some norms. I did not subdivide these norms. I just took them down as they came to mind. Some of these norms have to do with substantial holiness, others with practical or moral holiness, and some, of course, with both. First norm, frequentation of the sacraments. Faith tells me I am growing in holiness, both substantially and morally, if I have got into the habit of frequenting the sacraments, both the Eucharist and the sacrament of penance. If I've gone, say, to communion every day for the past week, I am safe in saying that I am substantially or essentially more pleasing to God today than I was a week ago. The same for the other sacraments, notably, of course, the sacrament of penance. The second norm, constancy in prayer. In other words, I can say of myself, or judge others, or help them to judge themselves validly, if I see either that I or they are more constant, more persevering in prayer. In other words, a person who prays sporadically may safely be said to be less advanced in holiness than one who prays regularly and constantly. And in all that we've said before about constant prayer applies here. The third norm, and with this, resignation to God's will. The degree and frequency of my resignation to the will of God when He enters my life and either causes me some pain or removes something which I like, the degree of my resignation is a measure of my growth. How do I know when I'm resigned? Well, that's easy. Do I complain when it's something awful? How readily do I do it? It is God's will that as a priest I recite my divine office. When do I say it? The last thing at night, or the first thing in the morning and through the day? It would seem wise to review some of the things that we have already said. We are so naturally prone to discouragement that we need to recognize in ourselves and help others to see in themselves growth in holiness. We first distinguish between holiness in essence and holiness in practice. Substantial holiness, essential holiness, is the possession of God's grace. Holiness in practice, or holiness as virtue, moral holiness, is shown in the practice of virtue. It is most valuable to know that the one holiness is not the other. That a person can be in substantial holiness and show no practice of virtue as a newly baptized child. And God allows all of us, well, not be too obviously holy in practice, knowing full well the least spark of holiness, and we think we're ready for canonization. We're so prone to pride. The essential holiness is the grace of God. Moral holiness is in the practice of virtue. And then we covered the first three norms. The first norm, frequentation of the sacraments. This fosters both essential and moral holiness. Just because I've been to Mass, say, this morning, I can honestly say by faith that I am essentially more holy than I was before I assisted at Mass. Secondly, constancy of prayer. Prayer is indeed needed both to maintain and to grow in essential holiness, even though most of our prayer concerns itself with moral holiness. We ask God to help us overcome whatever moral weakness we've got. And the third norm, resignation to God's will. Other things being equal, I am correspondingly more holy, more essentially and morally holy, as I am more and more resigned to God's will. There is no better book in any language on fostering resignation to God's will than Père Cussaud's Abandonment to Divine Providence. And this, remember, is resignation to God's will in the two principal ways, that God's will manifests itself in demanding that we give up what we like and in commanding that we do what we don't like. The two most important verbs in God's vocabulary, demand and command. He demands that we give back to him in the thousand ways that he can call upon us to surrender what we like. And with Job we say, the Lord gives and the Lord takes away. And we should tell people, look, be intelligent. Be smart. God is going to take it away anyhow. The secret is to let go. You can never win with God. That is God demanding and God commanding. The only reason that God's commands are difficult is because he so often commands us to do things we don't like. And we think our liberty is being infringed upon. Sure it is. But this is God. And now this brings us to the fourth norm, fidelity to rule. Again, other things being equal, a person becomes more holy, both essentially and morally, as he or she is more faithful in keeping the rule. Never forget, the English word rule is the Latin word regula, from which we have the verb regulate, from which we have the adjective regular, from which we have the noun regularity. How do I know when I am keeping the rule more faithfully? If my life is more regulated, if I am more regular, if there is more regularity in my life, that I regularly get up at a certain time, that I regularly do this and regularly do that. Religious life is regular life. There are two terms that for centuries now the church has used to identify religious life, and they are community and regularity. Community in living with others and regularity in having a system, a pattern, a predictability, or what I like to call a periodicity to my life. I do things for a certain while, and I stop doing them, and I start doing something else. Religious life is defined as that life in which we start doing something and start doing another out of obedience. That's why, remember, Teresa of Avila said, "All I need for religious life is a community of people and a bell to tell them, stop doing one thing, start doing something else." Now, the norm number 5, willingness to take correction. There are all kinds of forms of correction. Correction by superiors, correction by equals, and the hardest is correction by inferiors. And if I think the person is inferior to me, and she has the nerve, expect it. There is also correction which is explicit and correction which is implicit. In many ways, people are forever correcting other people. For example, ostentatious in doing something that the other person should be doing. The willingness to be corrected. Now, that does not mean that just because somebody doesn't like what I'm doing or would want me to be doing something else, that I jump and I do it. I have my conscience, so the willingness to take correction means that I'm willing to take correction, but according to the conscience that I've got. But one little subtlety in the religious life, a person thinks that I should be doing something or should not be doing something else. My conscience tells me the person is wrong. Quite possible. But my willingness to be corrected does not mean that I carry out the correction in practice. That's worth at least $50,000. In fact, with inflation, I would say $75,000. To quietly, humbly, smile and thank the person for what they think you should be doing or stop doing, and because you have your conscience and God's grace, you continue doing what you've been doing. Am I clear?
Please turn over to side B and push the play button immediately without rewinding the tape.